My name is Tiffany Hackett. I am an emergency physician out in California, in San Jose. I actually am working and practicing medicine in the ER, or in the hospital that I was born at, which is kind of neat. I spent a few years being medical director of San Leandro Hospital in the East Bay of Northern California. And currently, I am the CME chair for our organization, CEP, and I'm also one of our directors of quality and performance. My particular interest in this topic has to do with the fact that I need to get better when I have these tough conversations with our patients. Maybe it takes me, I'm a little slow, but I figured these conversations aren't going away, and in fact, they're becoming more and more frequent. We're kind of having to really face these challenging issues when we have conversations with our families. And so for me, I was a little selfish and said, why don't I do a talk on this? Because then I can learn a little bit more about it, but also really take advantage of learning from all of you and what you have to say. And this is where it gets a little fun, and I'm going to ask for a little help. We're all friends here, right? We're all emergency docs, providers, and nursing. So I'm going to ask for a little bit of audience participation, and that's why I have these two microphones set up here. So please don't be shy. It'll make it a little bit more fun, a little more interesting, and we can learn from each other. So you'll see what I mean when we get started, but let me go ahead and go from there. And this is, for those of you that know me, I'm kind of casual and tend to talk a little too fast, so if I'm doing that, I've got to turn my timer on. Tell me to stop, to slow down, but also feel free to ask questions. So we'll go from there. No disclosures, unfortunately, to report. And there's sort of two main objectives that I hope you all get out of today's talk. One is learning some key words, and we're going to talk about we're going to go over some specific key phrases that you can take with you to use at the bedside. And also understanding the impact that our communication skills have with the patients and our families' perception of their care and our service that we provide to them. So here's where we're going. I'm going to do some background information, talking a little bit about some of the medical literature that supports and some of the ASAP policies that support what we're talking about. And then there's three main types of difficult conversation scenarios we're going to do some role-playing with. One I call what a pain, and that will be very familiar to most of you. The second is managing expectations, and the third is end-of-life discussions. And then we'll answer any questions you all have and get you going to your next speaker. All right? So let's start with the background. When we avoid difficult conversations, we trade short-term discomfort for long-term dysfunction. And I'm ready to break that cycle. That's part of why I'm here today to help, again, learn, talk with you all and learn with you all. So looking at an article from JAMA of 1999, it shows that we really have a long way to go when it comes to communicating with patients. 54% of the time, we kind of didn't really address the patient's reasons for their visits, or 45% of the time, we really didn't address what their main worries were, what their main concerns were. So the good news is there's significant opportunity for us. We also know that good communication involves more listening, and patients really, and their families, in a study published in the Critical Care Medicine in 2004, they let us know that the more we give them time to talk, the more that we listen, the better that they feel that communication, the interaction was, the more satisfied they were. And again, from my personal experience, again, those of you that know me, this is an area where I can have opportunity to sort of stop and learn from. This is a great article that was just published last year in Annals, and it talks about how patients, when they come to the emergency department and their Prescani scores, I don't know if you guys have sort of heard this the thought, or maybe you feel this way, that if we don't give patients their pain medication, they're going to give me lousy patient satisfaction scores. And so therefore, you know, the candy man I become and I will continue to be. Well, I think a lot of us realize that that's probably not the best medicine to practice. And here's some information to actually help support the fact that we don't, that really giving pain medication is not necessarily what the patients, you know, want in terms of what's making them satisfied. There are other things that are more important. So leveraging that information can help. Giving good communication to patients can also help decrease our malpractice risk. So we know that even if patients have bad outcomes, not everybody sues. In fact, most don't. But a lot of times when those suits do happen, it's because we have poor communication with our patients and their families. And so to the extent that we can try to help connect with the patients and their families and reach out to them and really just try to figure out what it is that we can try to help and what suffering we can relieve, we're going to be better off even if there's not a great outcome. And our own ACEP, our College of Emergency Medicine, in their Choosing Wisely campaign, they are also supporting the use of palliative care. And this is something that I think is relatively new for us as emergency physicians. Are you all, how many of you guys actually have the ability to have a palliative care referral from the ED? So about maybe 20, 25% of you all. And I anticipate as maybe 5 years from now in this conference, the number's going to get higher and higher. But we know that they are recommending that we initiate palliative care services from the emergency department because I think that's going to basically help make the patient's quality of life, that which they have, even better. And finally, along the same lines, when they surveyed patients in California, two-thirds of those, when they talked about the end-of-life care, said they would prefer a natural death. I love that term, natural death. Natural death if they were severely ill. And only 7% would want sort of that full court press for us to do everything to try to save their lives. And while 80% of folks want to talk with their doctors about it, only 7% have done so. Now, I know we're not primary care doctors, nor are we oncologists or cardiologists sort of dealing with a lot of these end-of-life issues, but we see this stuff every day. This is our bread and butter. And so to the extent we can at least initiate that conversation, I think we will have done a service for the patient and for their family. All right, let's have a little bit of fun. We're going to start with our what a pain scenario. And think about who wants to do a little role playing here. We'll start with the video, though.
Hello, sir. What seems to be your emergency today?
Someone stole all of my Percocet, and I have back pain. I need a prescription for 120 Percocet.
Well, we do not write prescription refills for stolen drugs here, especially narcotics. Have you called your primary care physician?
I don't have one anymore. I lost my Medicaid, and I don't have no insurance.
Did you file a police report?
No, I just came straight here. I'm in pain, and I need more Percocets.
As I have told you before, we do not write script refills for Percocet. Would you like to be treated for your back pain today?
Yes, I need some drugs for this pain.
Okay, let's get you checked in.
What doctors are working today?
On a scale of 0 to
20.
10, with 10 being the worst?
20.
Okay, 10. Do you have any allergies?
Yes, I'm allergic to Ultram, Toradol, Naprixin, Flexeril, all non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, and most everything that does not have an opiate in it. I'm also allergic to Diet Snapple and soap.
Are you allergic to Tylenol?
Yes, I'm allergic to Tylenol.
You do realize that Percocet is made mostly of Tylenol?
One of the doctors I have seen told me that it is okay to take Tylenol if it is mixed with an opiate narcotic.
Have you tried heat or ice to help your back?
I'm allergic to heat and ice on my skin. Only opiate narcotics work for my pain.
Have you sustained an injury to your back which is causing this pain?
Do you know how long the wait is?
I will be honest with you. There are quite a few people in front of you, but we will get you back as fast as we can.
I'm having some pretty bad chest pain. What if we're having a heart attack? People with chest pain go straight back. I have seen it many times.
Sound familiar? Yeah, this is, you know, some common challenges. So now I'm going to ask for four people to be brave. Can I have four brave souls come up to the front? Ooh, my son's here. Love you, baby, but not now. He's nine. Thank you, baby. Four other people. And come on. All right, one guy over there. Three more people. There's a hand right there. Sorry. Thank you. Oh, yes, sir. Come on up.
Somebody else has to do this, too.
Yeah, I know. Come on. Come on. I know it's early in the morning. Some of these roles are fun. If you get to play the patient, it's super fun. But all right. Come on. Come on, guys. Yeah, come on up here. Thank you. Let's give a round of applause. All right. All right. Okay, first volunteer. Do you want to be the doctor or the patient?
Oh, the patient.
You can be the patient. Obviously, here. Do you want to be the doctor or the patient?
I don't care.
You don't care. Why don't you be the doc? And then we have two scenarios for pain, so why don't you guys hang tight and you guys will be in scenario two. Is that cool? I just figured, no, have a seat up here. I figured it's easier just to get everyone up here now.
We have a lot of community after getting on the stage.
I know, you know, I was foolish. I should have told you to come up this side. I just realized that. But thank you guys for participating. So who's our patient? All right. And I'm just want you to read what I wrote in number one. It's hopefully not bad handwriting. And we're going to go over this scenario. Don't let him see what it says. And then we have our doctor over there. Patient, what's your name?
Corey.
All right. And you guys, your mics are live, so that's cool. And what's your name, Doc?
Richard.
Okay. All right, guys. So let's look at our first scenario. What a pain. Who needs dental floss anyways? I'll read it for you guys. We have an 18-year-old male coming to the emergency department complaining of dental pain. He has poor dentition, as evidenced by the photograph, but no signs of an active infection. He was seen for the same thing 3 days ago, and he received 10 Norco tablet prescriptions. He's here with his 50-year-old mother, I'll be the mama, who will be his ride home. He's on an ED care plan, Dr. Richard. And on exam, you see some poor dentition, but no signs of an active infection. So we'll start the scene. Doctor, you can tell the patient, or say, patient, why don't you tell the doc why you're in the ED, and we'll hear your interaction.
Hi. I'm here for some pain medicine for my teeth. They really hurt.
How long have you been having problems with your teeth?
I would have introduced myself.
Go ahead and speak into the mic, too.
I would have introduced myself and all those nice things, but I want to get to the scenario.
Sure.
It's been going on for months. I got seen 3 days ago, and I'm out of my pain medicine.
3 months?
It's been going on for a lot longer than that.
Okay. Who have you seen during that time?
There was a doctor here who saw me and gave me some medicine for it. I saw a dentist 3 days ago, but it's still hurting.
What did the dentist do 3 days ago?
He pulled a couple out.
Okay. And have you talked to him about this?
The dentist, they aren't open today.
There's nobody on call?
When I called, nobody picked up.
Okay. You have any bleeding, or do you have a dry socket?
He gave me some medicine, and I ran out of it. I was hoping he could give me some more.
What medicine did he give you?
Something oxycodone or something.
Oh, okay. And any antibiotics?
I don't know. They gave me two things, but I got the oxycodone filled. Really, I just was hoping you could refill that.
Okay. Well, he's on a care plan.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, you're on a care plan. You've had this 3 months. I'd be glad to call your dentist. Do you want to give me his name, and I'll contact him?
They've always refilled my medicine in the past.
Well, we don't refill by policy of the hospital.
The other doctor who was here a couple days ago did.
I know. Some of the doctors don't read the policies.
That's never happened to me.
And that is true at my institution.
Yeah, I mean, they've always done it before. Can't you just refill it?
No, but I would be glad to get a hold of the dentist for you. And I know he can't call in a prescription for Percocets, but if he wants you to have some Percocets, I'd be glad to write the prescription for your dentist. But may I have his name, et cetera?
All right. Okay, good. Thank you, guys.
How far do you want me to take it?
All right, we'll have you trade seats with we're going to do one more scenario, then we'll talk a little bit about how that went. So would you like to be our patient? Is that cool? All right, so I'm going to have you just read what I wrote by number two, and hopefully you can read my handwriting. And what's your name?
Never been a problem before. You can't see the pain position because you don't have insurance. Or they don't take your insurance.
Okay, what's your name?
Jeanette.
Thank you, Jeanette, for being brave. And what's your name?
Paul.
All right, thank you guys for being brave. All right, guys, let's do our next pain scenario. The usual, please. So Jeanette's a 55-year-old female. She ages quite well. She works at Nordstrom Makeup Counter. She's got a migraine headache, chronic migraines, and she comes in about once a month for IV Dilaudid, Phenergan fluids. When Paul looks at the prior emergency department notes, he sees that she has been referred to pain management in the past. On exam, she's well-dressed, she's well-groomed, unremarkable exam, she looks well, vital, she's not tachycardic, she's not vomiting. So, doctor, you finish the history and exam, tell the patient your assessment and plan.
So, I've done my history and physical. You're saying that this feels like this is your usual headache, that there's no thing, kind of red flags.
Do you have any vomit bags? I think I'm going to throw up.
Okay, here you go. It's my policy that I don't treat migraines with IV opioids. There are a variety of very effective medications that can help. So what I'd like to do is try a cocktail of drugs that in about 90% of my patients will get their pain to go away. Do you have any medication allergies?
Have you read my L chart?
I have, ma'am. But it's my policy that I don't give narcotics for migraine headaches or other drugs that are more effective and have fewer side effects?
You know, I work for a living. I only come here when I'm really miserable.
And I very much want to get your pain under control, but there are some things that we need to try first that I think are going to be effective.
Can I ask what you're going to give me?
Absolutely. We're going to be giving you medicine that should be very effective.
This is true to life, you know.
This is just so liberating.
See how fun it is to volunteer.
I understand that you're feeling bad, and I think we can get you feeling better. It's just that you're asking for a medication that I don't typically prescribe for this condition.
Well, if I had high blood pressure and I had a side effect to one medication, you probably won't give it to me. I have a cocktail that works here. I don't come here every day.
You don't come here every day, but you do. You are on medications that aren't optimal for treating your condition. And I'd like to find something that works for you that will allow you to get back to work, to be more functional than once the pain's gone away than you will be after you're getting the medicines that you're asking for.
All right. Just give me, we're good. We're good. All right. Thank you, guys. Stay up here for our little discussion. Thanks for that. All right, so now the rest of the audience, some questions. So I have a question for you all. What were some things that were successful about their interactions? So I thought you guys did remarkably well. Just a lot of you just meeting each other in front of a big audience. It probably feels kind of comfortable because you're used to this. But what were some things that you all noticed out there? And I'll repeat it if you can't hear because we don't have a mic. Stowe, you want to walk around with a mic. But that were most successful. What did you guys notice about what they said? Yeah. So I do want to help you. I'm not blowing you off by letting her know that I definitely, and I want to work on getting your pain under better control. Good. So yes, go ahead.
Both doctors did a very good job of staying calm.
I thought so too. They did a great job at staying calm. And it was this, I think that's one of the keys, is just sort of not letting your own anger or frustration or biases show. I think you guys are really good at that. Maybe you have no biases. However, if you do, I couldn't tell. So that was awesome. Very good. Anything else? Yes, in the back.
We call it the broken record technique, where you just keep saying the same thing. Don't change your answer because of their demands. And I think they both did that.
So the broken record technique. You're basically repeating your message, what you want to say, kind of regardless of, there's no negotiation, basically. You're kind of just saying, this is what we're going to be doing. We're trying to help you, and this is what the plan is going to look like, or something like this. Great. Any other thoughts, any other comments? All right, good. So we talked about what they did well, their body language, staying calm. Key phrases, again, we want to help you, how they put it. And then any opportunities for improvement? And this is always a tough one. Yes, in the back. So saying, I'm sorry that you're uncomfortable, I'm sorry that you're suffering, I'm sorry that you're in pain. Okay, that's reasonable. Thank you. Any other feedback from this scenario? Well, again, I thought you guys did an awesome job. A couple of takeaways that I would say is kind but firm. And I've got my sons now 9, but when they were younger, I read practically every book there was because they were driving me crazy. And I was like, how do you be a good mom? And one of the messages was really being kind but firm. When the answer's no, the answer is no, but being respectful about how you say that. Avoiding blame. So this is a tricky one. Do you guys have pain policies or ED care plans in your departments? A fair amount of you guys? How many of you guys do? So about maybe 40% or half of you. We do as well. And I try to say, sometimes I'll hear people say, well, I'd like to give it to you, but the policy says that we can't. You know, I'm like, no, the policy really is, I'm part of the policy. We are part of the department. And so I say, as a department, we've decided that this is not going to be in your best interest from a health point of view or from a safety point of view. So sort of saying that, you know, you are part of the policy. Word choice matters, and I believe, I think you said it did a great job. You had said something about opiate analgesia. Sometimes using the word narcotics or obviously illegal drugs, it's sort of a stigmatizing way, but saying things like opiate medication or pain medication can make it a little sort of destigmatize that conversation depending on how things are going. and being polite and honest. You're on an ED care plan because we're concerned for your health or we're concerned for your safety. And I think, how can you argue with that? I mean, of course, the patients find a way, but I mean, I think that's sort of the angle that I like to use in addressing alternatives, including community resources. And I think, Richard, you did a great job of that because you said, you know, let me call your dentist. You know, you can leave them a voicemail after hours, think, or touch base with the answering service. So I thought that was very good because you're trying to help the patient out in a positive way. So some key phrases, non-judgmental questions, depending on the scenario. Do you think you've had some issues with analgesic or pain medications? I've told you about my concerns with your use of prescriptions. What do you think about what I've said? Just opening up that conversation. And are you asking the patient, are you concerned about your use of prescription medications? And finally, the one that I like and use a lot is I want to make sure that we do what's best for your health and for your safety. All right? Okay. Yeah. Yes, you guys are excused. Thanks, you guys. I appreciate it. We have a quick question. Yes.
The broken record technique. Mm-hmm.
So the question was, is that when we use the broken record, that technique, that's awesome. What if the patient uses the broken record technique, then you guys are both stuck there. And that definitely has happened to me. I'll tell you one of the things that I try to do at some point, then I'll sort of jump off and say, you know, I think, you know, I need to end this conversation. What I'd like to do is this. Is that okay? Because I need to step out. And I try to exit it. But some of you guys may have a better way of doing it, or did you have a question? A better way of doing it first. Okay. Question. Let's do question here, then we'll keep going, and then we'll have some more fun with some participants.
My question is, how do you have a more difficult conversation, which is with one of your partners, who persists in refusing to follow along with pain management guidelines and continues to give people narcotics despite...
That's a whole other conversation, which I love. The question is, how do you have this conversation? So let's say that my friend Fred here is the candy man. And Fred and I are partners, and I'm the one who says no, kind but firm, and they keep asking, but I want to talk to the other doctor. I want to talk to the other doctor. How do you handle that? So I think here's my personal feeling, and this sort of depends on what your group politics are. So if I'm a pit doc, I tend to go to my site leadership team and have that conversation with them, because this is really about all of us having a uniform practice at our department level. I wore a medical director hat for a few years, and I definitely had that problem. And so I would basically just bring up that conversation with the group and say, guys, this is the policy that we agreed upon 3 years ago. I'd like to review it, and I'd like to make sure that this is still consistent with what we think is reasonable and fair, and basically try to get the team to buy into that. And for the most part, it's pretty straightforward. And then once you kind of get that buy-in, then I feel like we have the group sort of saying, the group is asking all of us to do this. We as a group agreed to do X, Y, and Z. And then I think from that point of view, it's really a leadership saying, my job as a medical director or assistant director is to hold you accountable. And I understand that, you know, this isn't happening. So I think that's really where the leadership needs to get involved. And if you are the leadership, we can talk more afterwards about those conversations, because they're hard but necessary. But that's sort of the strategy that I use. I said, let's all get on the same page again, kind of right our ship, make sure we're all having this open conversation. And there'll be disputes. That's cool. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to have a decision. And then whatever that decision is, people need to respect that. And that's how I feel. Again, easier said than done. Is another quick question? Or?
It was more of a comment for the patient that's actively vomiting or pain. Mm-hmm.
So I like that. So I'll just repeat briefly what you said, is that you'll at least try, say, let me try something. Well, let's try to at least initiate the process of making you feel better, because you're obviously throwing up here on stage and we need to do something about it. So let's try that, and then I'll come back and check on you and kind of give them a little bit of time to kind of let the dust settle a bit, hopefully get some of the symptoms getting a little bit better and improving. So, all right, cool. Let's move on to our next type of scenarios, managing expectations. I don't know, but another little video here.
Welcome to the emergency department. I will be your doctor. What brings you here today?
Well, I hit my head, and I'm here to get a CAT scan to make sure I'm okay.
How did you hit your head?
I bumped my head on a bookshelf at work.
Did you lose consciousness?
No.
Did you have a seizure, vomit, or have visual changes?
No.
When did it happen?
Right after I met with my union representative.
No, I mean what time did it happen?
Well, I wanted to get some food for lunch, but the usual restaurant I go to is closed. So I went to a different place and got a pasta salad, but they only had whole grain. I met my union representative in the elevator, and then I went to sit down. When I sat down, I bumped my head on the bookshelf.
What time did it happen?
I've had problems digesting whole grains ever since I started mutilating myself when I was 14. I think I'm this way because of the detergent my mother used.
What time did you hit your head?
At 1 p.m. yesterday afternoon.
It's 9:30 at night. What made you decide to come to the emergency room today?
My friend Brenda told me I should get checked out because of what happened to Natasha Richardson. She was a beautiful, famous person, and she died after she hit her head. That's why I need a CAT scan.
You don't have any of the signs of a serious head injury, and it has been more than 24 hours since you hurt yourself. You do not need a CAT scan.
I need a CAT scan. I know because I'm very in tune with my body. I have a high pain tolerance. This one time I knew I was sick from some kind of toxins because I felt strange. I went to 5 different doctors and they all said the tests were normal. But I knew they were wrong. I tried a holistic vitamin supplement that my personal trainer gave me and I felt better. So I know I need a CAT scan.
You do not need a CAT scan if you did not get knocked out, have not been vomiting, and have been fine for many hours after a minimal injury. A CAT scan would expose you to a huge amount of radiation for no reason.
Don't lie to me. CAT scans use big magnets, and I'm very comfortable with magnets.
CAT scans do not use magnets.
You are lying to me. I know they use magnets because I saw it on General Hospital. They used it on a girl who had amnesia. They found a problem, and they saved her life.
You are thinking of an MRI. CAT scans use X-rays. They can increase your cancer risk.
Then get me an MRI. I can feel myself bleeding inside. I have a strange prickling feeling on my stomach. I have a rash on my foot.
I'm very sorry, but you do not need an MRI either. I'm going to discharge you home.
Hi there, Mary Jane. Did you get your CAT scan yet? Brenda, the doctor won't give me one. I have a prickling feeling on my stomach. Doctor, she needs a CAT scan right now.
I'm sorry, but your friend does not need a CAT scan.
I went to school to be a nurse's aide for a year before I flunked out, and I know for a fact that she needs a CAT scan.
I disagree with you.
Brenda is a very intuitive healer. I know something is wrong with me. You are a terrible doctor. I want another doctor. You're so arrogant. You think Western medicine has the answer to everything. All you care about is money.
It would be wrong for me to order a dangerous test that you do not need.
I just want you to help me. I just want some compassion. Isn't that your job? I need a CAT scan now. I can't believe you are abusing me this way.
I have other patients I must see. This young...
There you go. Sorry. All right. So I think you know where this is going. What I'd love to do is get 4 more brave volunteers, if you guys don't mind, for brave souls out there. It's really easy, really fun. You guys saw how much fun Richard and Paul and everybody else had out there. All right. Would you like to come up? Please? Yeah, you. Yeah. Actually, I was pointing to the one behind you, but yes, both of you guys. Yes, both of you. Well, one of you guys want to come up there, up here, please? We'll get a couple more volunteers. We got one over there. No? Or she's heading out? Heading out or up. All right, good. I need 2 more. 2 more volunteers. Thank you. Oh, perfect. And the stairs are on this side in case you don't want to get hurt. All right. Thank you very much for volunteering. I'm Tiffany. What's your name?
Kevin.
Would you like to be the patient or the doctor?
I'll be the patient.
You'll be the patient. Why don't you have a seat over here? Hi. I'm Tiffany. What's your name?
Lori.
You mind being the doc? All right. So you'll be over here. Hi. I'm Tiffany. What's your name?
Julie.
Welcome. Have a seat. So I'm going to present the next scene. If you want to, so you're going to be the If you can't read it, I'll read it to you. Hi, I'm Tiffany. How are you?
Good. I'm Brent.
All right. Have a seat, and we'll go ahead and get started here. All right. So managing expectations. Who wants the treatment? So here's our first scenario. So we've got, I have a short-term memory. Carrie, Lori, and Kevin. Okay, so Kevin's going to be the father, and Lori is our physician. So the father's giving the history. This is he's here with his 29-year-old son who wants and the father wants inpatient detox for his son. The son is depressed because he's an alcoholic, and the patient drinks because he's depressed. The patient can't go home, the dad says, because my son is suicidal, and he's trying to drink himself to death. You're just kind of noncommittal about anything. Right now, you get to play the silent son. He's noncommittal about anything. You don't have any abdominal pain. You're not vomiting. And the patient is really avoiding giving the history. He's just sort of sitting there, his arms crossed, and looking down, and just not engaging. He smells like alcohol. He's a little tachycardic, heart rate 103, pressure's normal-ish, afebrile, vitals not too bad. He's got a benign abdomen. He's able to ambulate. He's not super ataxic. So, Dad, you want your son admitted, so why don't you talk to Dr. Lori and let her know how things are going. And just for your reference. Okay, go ahead, guys.
So my son...
He's talking to the mic, sorry.
My son needs to be in the hospital. I'm sure he's going to have a seizure. He wants to stop drinking. He's been living with us for 17 years now. I think he's really committed to stopping drinking now. And he's had delirium tremens before. He looks sick to me. I think he's a little agitated. He stopped drinking about an hour ago, I think. So he's really committed to it.
Okay. Well, I'm really glad that you're coming in to talk to me about this, and I'm glad that you guys are here together. I think that it really shows how much support you have for your son, and that's exactly what he's going to need going forward, is this family support that you've provided for him so well already. So I'm going to be talking to him alone, because he's an adult, and that's really important that we talk to him and sort of see where he's feeling in this whole process. And as this process goes forward, we're going to need to have a lot of different conversations, and some of them may be here in the emergency room, and some of them may be in other sort of treatment facilities, and we're going to work it out together as far as the best place for him to be and what he wants as well. And I think that having your support is going to be really key to going forward.
Yeah, he doesn't really know what he wants. We always know what's best for him. We've always known. We've always taken care of him. He needs to be in your hospital, because if he has another seizure, he stopped breathing once. It was horrible. You can't imagine. So he really needs to be in your hospital now. And I'm sure he's not going to drink anymore. He's promised me that he wouldn't drink anymore. And so, you know, you don't want him to die at home. We don't want him to go to a facility where they can't take care of him. He needs to be an inpatient here, really. I don't want him to have another seizure.
I know. You're right. I can't imagine how scary that must have been for you to witness that. Because he's an adult, he does have the opportunity to make his own decisions about these sort of
He's not
plans.
Thinking correctly.
I know. It's very, very hard to watch our loved ones make decisions that are affecting their health poorly. So what we can do is we can set him up with treatment plans that fit what he's willing and able to do for himself right now. I can't make him stay in the hospital because he is an adult.
I think he really wants to deep down, even though he says no.
I know.
All right, I think we get the point here. So, all right, good job, guys. We'll give you guys a little round of applause, and we'll have you trade out. Do you want to come in over here? And we'll have you over here. Thank you. All right, so remind me your guys' names again.
Brent,
so you'll be the patient's father, okay? Right. I think it says mother in the scenario, but we'll go with father. And you'll be the doc. Are you okay with that?
Sure.
And remind me your first name again?
Julie.
Okay, Brent and Julie. So Dr. Julie's here. And let's see. This is your reaction. That's in case any of these things come up, okay?
This is the same patient.
Okay. This is going to be for a different patient, so I'll give you a new scenario. Oh, no, you can't look at that thing. That's the fun part. All right. Managing expectations. Doctor, do you know what you're doing? I wouldn't ask that for you. So it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Brent brings in his 3-year-old son with a cough. The patient has the baby, the 3-year-old has a history of eczema, and he's in the ED with, it says mom, but his dad. There's no history of asthma, but the patient has used albuterol in the past. This is his third visit in the past month for wheezing in this otherwise healthy 3-year-old child. And family history, dad has a history of asthma. On exam, the patient's tachycardic, 110, statin 96%, respiratory rate's 24, no fever. but he is tachypneic, not retracting. The patient's non-toxic, but he's coughing and wheezing a lot. So let's start the scene. So, Doc, why don't you give Dad the assessment and plan of this 3-year-old coughing, wheezing kiddo.
Okay, Dad. So thanks for bringing in little Brent Jr. today. It sounds like he's had a lot of problems with wheezing and reactive airways in the last couple of months, huh?
Yes.
How many times have you had to come to the hospital?
Oh, I haven't kept count, but a lot.
Okay. And who have you been seeing as an outpatient when he's been sick?
Well, we had to change insurance plans, so I can't remember who it is now. It's a pediatrician.
Okay. You've been able to see the pediatrician in the office?
Yes.
And what kind of treatments have you had to do?
Well, he wanted to, you know, he talked about steroids and just really toxic things like that, and so I didn't like him.
Okay. Were you prescribed other medicines that you weren't comfortable having him take?
Well, you know, he has a nebulizer, and he uses that. I think that with a humidifier, we also use a natural humidifier and ozone producer. So that helps.
Okay. So why do you think you needed to bring him back in tonight?
Well, it wasn't working.
Okay. Have any treatments worked for him?
Well, you know, it gets worse and gets better, and I've never been able to really tell. So I don't know.
It seems like you're concerned that he's not getting good symptom control with the treatments that he's on at home, but that you've had concerns with some of the treatments that the pediatrician prescribed.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't want to make him worse with toxic stuff, you know, but he needs, I mean, it's not working. That's why we're back.
What are you concerned about happening if he were to take, say, the steroid medicine that was prescribed?
Well, that he'd die.
And what makes you worried about
that? Well, I read on the internet all about steroids and how bad they are, and so I don't want to take that chance.
Okay. Well, tonight what we're seeing is that little Brent Jr. is having signs of another flare-up of this, you know, reactive airways or asthma. And we can't always tell at this age how it's going to turn out, but it certainly seems that he's prone to this kind of thing. And this is probably something that he's going to have to deal with, you know, for a long time, at least through his childhood. And we know in kids like this that steroid medicine in short doses, meaning for a couple of days, can really help with inflammation in the lungs and turn around the cycle of the inflammation that they're having in the lungs.
Yeah, you know, I read about them. I know all about them from the internet. So no steroids.
Okay. Well, I understand that, you know, you're worried about giving him medication because it is your kid. And
you think diet would help?
Diet?
Yes.
Is there a dietary?
Like food dyes or gluten?
You know, I'm an emergency doctor. And so my job is really to make sure the little Brent Jr. isn't having an emergency.
Okay.
And there may be other doctors that you could see during the daytime in an office that might have opinions about food dyes and glutens, but, you know,
all right.
Unfortunately, it's really not my area of expertise.
What are we going to do?
Well, at this point, he's still having signs of wheezing, so I'd like to give him another treatment and observe him for a few hours since we're concerned that he's not getting better.
But no radiation, right?
Radiation? No, no radiation.
No,
I don't think
X-ray.
We need to get a chest X-ray
good,
at this point.
Good.
I'm not seeing any signs of a bacterial infection.
Yeah, because I don't like radiation either.
All right, good. Let's stop that there. Thank you, guys. Those are tough. First of all, great job up here. Like, you guys can take care of my family any day. So I think this is awesome, just watching you guys. And thank you again for being the brave souls. We'll have a quick discussion here. What were some of the things that were successful about the interactions that we just saw? What are some of the things that you guys thought went really well? Yeah.
In the first scenario, I thought she did a really good job of addressing the father's concerns, not giving in to his demands, but yes, I understand that this is hard to see, but I think that helped establish the form, which is going to be useful when telling him exactly what he wants.
So she addressed the father's concerns via establishing rapport, and that helped to establish the rapport, so saying, I know that this is difficult for you, and of course, you're concerned about your son. So I thought that was very good. What else? What are some other things that you guys observed that went really well up here? So there's another comment I thought over there. Yeah.
She also reinforced how important the support of the father was and having family support to put that on his trip.
Reinforced family support and thanking him for being here because obviously it's a long road with the son that's sick the way he is. How about in the second scenario? That was a little tough one. Gluten? I mean, hello. That was good, Brent. I think one of the things that I liked is that you were just sort of just giving him the time to talk about what's going on and kind of letting him sort of talk. It's been a long course for this kiddo, so allowing that that dialogue to happen. Anything else? Any other comments? Yeah?
She encouraged him to
That's true, yeah. So just acknowledging, you know, even though something may be super goofy or crazy, if they read these things on the internet, to these guys it's like, like, this is the way things are. And so acknowledging the concerns and being respectful about it, I think, is good too. And I like how you sort of said, you know, gluten, wow, that's way. But you know, you didn't say like, no way. Yeah. But you're like, you know, that's a conversation probably for the outpatient setting. So I think that was good. So any other comments about these scenarios? I really like that as well, because you know, the question I think you asked was like, you know, how's it going for you so far? I mean, but in a polite way. And I think that's really, that was good, because you did it very respectfully. And I think that's how you can kind of sort of try to sometimes turn people around and say, well, maybe we can try this if it doesn't work, if it hasn't been working so far, the ozone and everything like that. So so good. Any other opportunities for improvement you guys saw in the scenarios? Yes. That's great, right? And we know, right, they don't kick in for like probably till the kid goes home, but we can sort of take advantage of the fact that, like, let's at least try to give him a dose, and maybe you'll give him Decadron instead of prednisone, so he gets a couple more days of medication in it. So good. So maybe sort of saying, let's, you know, acknowledging the concern and saying, let's keep him here and watch him while we give him the medicine to make sure that doesn't happen. So that's a great suggestion. All right, cool. So I'm going to give some takeaways here. So validating the patient and family concerns, which you guys definitely did a great job of, addressing some dissatisfaction right away. So there wasn't a whole lot of dissatisfaction here, but I think just we know that we nip it in the butt, and we're going to get, it's going to be easier now rather than downstream. Addressing what options can be done, even if they're later. You know, talking about the gluten thing, you know, we can't really talk about that now, but we can sort of defer that. Use give and take, and don't hold the patient's, the family member or the patient's behaviors against them. And explain why you feel a certain medication or test is or isn't indicated. So in the, you know, the steroids, saying, you know, albuterol's great, it does this, but we need to, there's two components. There's another component of asthma that it really doesn't touch, and, you know, we're trying real hard here, but we really aren't addressing this area, and that's why I think we probably need to at least give a trial. And I like your idea of having them observe so that we can make sure nothing happens from the patient, or the family can feel more comfortable with that decision. Some key phrases is there a specific reason that a test is being requested, like in the CAT scan thing? Is there something specific you're worried about, which is always good? And I think that was, you know, you were like, I don't want my kid to die. Like, nobody wants that. And that's a very legitimate concern when your child can't breathe. So, you know, acknowledging that. And then sometimes you're not sure why the patient's there, so I just sometimes I ask, you know, what's the best way I can help you today? And sometimes the answer to that question is figure out why I have my chronic fill in the blank. Anything chronic, I'm like, oh gosh, out of my scope of practice. But at least we know what the patient is expecting, so we can help to manage those expectations when it comes to those conversations. All right, thank you guys very much. Can I get four more volunteers real quick here? Just four people to come up on stage, and then we have the next video clip's real short. I've got one coming on up. Use the stairs if you guys don't mind. I need three more folks here. I got one. I need three. Anyone else? Come on, have a little fun here. We got a twofer. That's awesome. I need two more people. Got two. Need two. Two people. Come on up, please. There we go. Got three. Just need one. Just one more. One more. Anyone else? Sorry, Luca. You can't do it, honey. one more volunteer to come on up. Let's see. Carl. Is there somebody in the audience whose name might be Carl? Is there someone? Oh, okay. Oh, wow. What a coincidence. Dr. Susan, everybody. all right. Let's give a round of applause for our volunteers. Oh, thank you for coming up. I appreciate
it. Your son has an idea how lucky he is.
Oh, thank you. All right. End of life discussions. Let's do a quick little video, and then we'll move forward to finish up our chat today. All right.
Doesn't make sense.
Even though I had created a super medical crime fighting team, I felt lousy. See, I had just told Betty that her lungs had finally given out and she wasn't going to leave the hospital this time.
So, what are my choices?
Well, we could put you on a breathing machine, but it's unlikely you'd ever come off of it. Or I could just make sure you're as comfortable as possible. As comfortable as possible. I've said that a million times, and I still have no idea what it means.
There you go, Betty. That's every cotton ball in the hospital.
I had very, very comfortable.
Then you're ready to die. Look, Betty, is there anyone you'd like to talk this over with?
All right. So end-of-life scenarios are hard for all of us to address, I think, but it is something we see almost every day, if not every day, in our emergency department. So what we're going to do is we're going to do some two scenarios related to that. So are you going to be the patient or the, let's see, the family member? Carl, is that cool?
Sure.
All right. So you'll be the family member. Do you mind being the doc for the first scenario?
Sure.
All right. And what's your name?
Jessica.
Thank you. So we've got Carl and Dr. Jessica. Let's see. And Carl, here are some notes in case you're not sure how you feel. So I'll be the first scenario as well. All right. So Carl has a 95-year-old mother with dementia. She's bedbound. She's minimally verbal. She's been admitted from the outside SNF three times over the past 6 weeks. Each time she has a sodium of greater than 160. She's got recurrent UTIs. Now Carl's mom is back in the emergency department with confusion, lethargy, and she's refusing to eat. On exam, Dr. Jessica notes that the patient is a frail elderly female. She appears dehydrated. She's tired. She's not in any distress, however. So we're going to start the scene where Jessica is going to be calling, Dr. Jessica is going to call Carl to discuss end-of-life care and what he wants next. So make sure you guys speak into the mics and ring, ring.
Doctor, what can you do for my mom? I'm just so concerned. I'm just upset. She's living in this nursing home, but she keeps having to come to the hospital because she's getting sick all the time. And nobody seems to be able to help her.
Well, it sounds like she's pretty sick. Sounds like she's not doing too well. I'd like to help her the best I can. Has your mom ever...
Is she going to die, doctor? Is she going to die?
Well, not right now. She's stable. But I'd like to talk to you about what you think she would want in terms of... treatment.
I'm not sure she knows what she wants. She just keeps coming back and forth between the nursing home and the hospital, and she doesn't seem to be able to tell us, you know, what she needs or wants.
Has she ever discussed anything with you about being on life-sustaining treatment, having to go on a ventilator, whether she'd want CPR if her heart stopped?
Well, I do remember, it must have been years ago, that she did tell me once, we were having a discussion because her husband had died and they put all these tubes in her and it was just so uncomfortable. And she, I remember she told me that she never wanted that to happen to her.
Okay. Well, it sounds like she's continuing to get dehydrated and she doesn't want to eat or drink anymore. This might be... kind of heading towards the end of her life. I guess we have to think about what we want to do from here. Do we want to continue to do intravenous? Do we want to do artificial, you know, feeding if she doesn't want to eat?
Oh, I don't want any tubes in her, but the fluids that, you know, help her feel better, that would be fine.
Okay. We can certainly help her feel as good as she can feel, so that she's not thirsty and, you know, in pain and uncomfortable. You know, certainly we can think about antibiotics. I'm not sure what antibiotics have been tried before. I'd have to look at the culture results from the last year, but whether that's going to prolong her life in the long term, it's hard to say right now.
Okay, but you can make her comfortable?
Absolutely.
And she won't be in pain?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you, doctor.
Good job, guys. Thank you very much. Let's give a little applause. And to be mindful of the time, I know we're probably going to go a few minutes over. I'm going to let you all off the hook, but just hang out on stage just so we can kind of get through. Because I don't want to, in order to kind of get through the material, I'm going to skip that last scenario. But I do want to find out what you guys thought about this interaction. And that's always a tough one when you're having that, especially over the telephone. And, you know, there may not be the recognition of how sick somebody is. So any thoughts about the conversation about how aggressive do we want to be in mom's care? No comments there? Yeah? Trying to figure out how much awareness he has about the illness, absolutely. And body language is less important when you're on the phone, but yeah, you had a comment as well.
She did a great job keeping it as the tone as what would she want, as opposed to forcing him to try to make a decision that he didn't feel comfortable making.
Right, because clearly...
What would she want? Does she have experience with this?
So trying to tease out what does the patient want, because really this is what it's all about. It's about what the patient wants, and obviously she's demented, but sort of going back and eliciting that information that from the past when the patient had had a family member with something similar. So let's just do a couple conversations about how do we address these conversations. When the palliative care world, that SPICES is an acronym that's used that can kind of help those conversations. So one is try to find a setting. So if you're actually live with this person, find a place where it's quiet, where you can sit down, have eye contact with the family members or patient, depending on the situation. Asking them about their perception. So like you're saying, you know, what is it that you understand so that I can address that? And then asking them, like, how much information do you want to know? And I mean, you had asked earlier, how do we address it when the family says, oh, mom has cancer, but we don't want her to know? And I think, talking to the patient and say, and the family to sort of get an idea of how much do you want to know so that we're respectful of their wishes, but at the same time be able to be as honest and forthcoming as possible. And then let the patient know what's going on. I have some bad news, informing them about what the situation is, trying to use non-clinical terms as much as possible, and then allowing them time. And this is hard when we're in a busy emergency department, but trying to sort of say, I'm going to be dedicating time to just sort of allow them to just absorb some of the shock, cry, do the things that they would normally do when they're having some of these challenging conversations. And then talk about what's next, because I think that's always, families are, they're sort of in shock, and they need to know what would I go from here, what's going to happen. So you can talk about the conversation with goals of care and what the next steps are. So summarizing the big picture using clear and understandable terms, I think it's very appropriate to use the word dying if that's what's happening. I mean, that older lady with this recurrent sodium of 160 and the UTIs, her body's in the process of dying most likely based on what we heard. Make recommendations, particularly if the family's open to it. Acknowledge any discrepancies between, what they want and their expectations. She's been intubated so many times and she always comes off. Well, yes, but she always comes back. And at some point, we're not going to be able to extubate her. And informing them regarding the likelihood of successive treatment. So, if I intubate her today, it's unlikely that she's going to be able to either be extubated in a week or ever extubated, or she might need a tracheostomy, things like that. So letting them know that. Some key phrases which I want to share briefly before we head out. I like to use I'll read the paragraph, the sentence. In this situation, a lot of families might decide that they want us to focus on making their loved ones comfortable and avoid invasive treatments that are likely to cause more suffering. So using the term more suffering, I think, can kind of outline what may happen. And it may not provide any benefit at this stage of the illness. Your loved one is dying despite maximal medical therapy. And I wish there was more we could do to make your father better, but of course we cannot change the course of the illness, whatever it may be. We can and will continue to treat his symptoms and to ensure optimal comfort. So we're saying we're not treating him. We're just not going to be able to cure the patient, which is hard to hear a lot of times. And we want to do all you can to prevent your loved one from suffering. And I think as physicians, this is really one of the things that we truly believe. And I think reminding ourselves to articulate that to the families is important, because that's true. That's what we want. We're here to do. You can let the patients know. If you won't, don't recommend CPR or life support, because it may not be in line with the patient's goals of care, and it may cause pain and suffering. The expression, a natural death, I use a lot when I'm seeing these older patients who come into the ER. Do you want us to allow your loved one to die a natural death? Or if they say, we don't want machines, and I'll say, okay, so then what we'll do, we'll work on making your father comfortable, and he may end up dying a natural death. And I think that's okay, because eventually that's what happens, but the natural death, I think, is a kinder way to describe it. And then also let them know we'll never stop treating your family member. All right, so things to avoid. Do you want us to do everything? The term DNR is a challenging one. We all know what we mean, and that's what we're trying to get at. Sometimes having the conversation, but we have to use other words for it. Don't tell a patient that it's time to withdraw care. They're telling someone that their family member has no quality of life, I'm not sure that that's really significantly beneficial. I think let them articulate what they think the quality of life is, and we can kind of help them with a reality check and avoiding medical jargon. So we want, one of the things is when we're having these conversations, we want to try to avoid asking patients, family members, to choose between life and death. I mean, that's not our goal. We want to know to what degree we want to be aggressive in their care, but we try to phrase it in a way that they're not saying, do you want us to let her live or do you want her to die? Because that's how folks feel, and I can understand that, but one of the things that we need to try to do is try to soften that situation up. And this is a quote from Scott Weinberg. Aggressive palliative care is just as important as aggressive critical care in the emergency department. And definitely aligned with ASAP's Choosing Wisely theme. So, all right, I think I went a few minutes over. I apologize. Here's my info if you want to contact me. And thank you guys for playing along and coming up on stage and participating. So have a great rest of your ASAP conference.